Hello, everybody. This is the Friendly Bear Podcast, where we interview some of the best and brightest traders in the trading community. Listen to inspiring stories and nuggets of insight from current and future game changers in the trading space. Listen and learn as we explore all types of trading niches with some of the best in the industry from a Friendly Bear point of view. Make sure to check out the Friendly Bear Podcast's new YouTube channel called Friendly Bear Research, which includes all the podcast video content and supplemental screen shares. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. With that being said, I'm your host, David, aka Reverse Long, and this is the Friendly Bear Podcast. Let's dive in. What's up, everyone? This is David, aka Reverse Long, and today I'm here with Mo Hurwitz, and I got in contact with Mo through LinkedIn. We have several mutual people that we are connected with in there, and I'm always looking to get connected and to invite good traders or traders I'm interested in seeing what they're up to and connecting with on any social media and Kinfo as well. And Mo had a profile on Kinfo. He was doing pretty well, and yeah, I decided to like check it out and ask him to come on for a podcast or an interview and see what he's up to, and here he is. So what's up, Mo? How's it going?
Oh, good, man. Can't wait for the weekend. How about you?
Good, man. I just got back from Colombia. I was there for a 3-day trip. And yeah, you know, I don't feel jet lagged at all, surprisingly. So today I just jumped back into the screens. And this weekend, Mo, check it out. I'm pretty sure you probably know Stephen Ducks, right? So like I'm going to his conference. It's not too far away from here this weekend. So.
LA, right?
Yeah, in Irvine. So
Irvine, right.
Yeah, Irvine's like 30 minutes away from LA, a little bit south. Yeah. Yeah, man.
Used to live there. I wanted.
Yeah. Oh, you used to live there. You used
to, very, yeah. OC, like around Irvine. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to Dux's thing. I love conferences. I go to as many of them as I can. It just was a conflict this time around. But hopefully next time.
Absolutely, man. We'll check it out. For those listening and for Mo as well, like I'm gonna be doing like a 30-minute podcast each day after the event, like to keep my mind fresh. I'm gonna go over like the summary, you know, put it on the podcast. So it's cool. But yeah, Mo. Okay, so back to you. Okay, so we want to give a little background on yourself, like where you're from, how you got started, and all the background information.
Oh, for sure, man. So I'm from Israel originally. I moved over here after the, they got mandatory army. After that, I moved over here straight away. And, you know, I had an entrepreneurial, spirit from the get-go, and I did a ton of stuff, started businesses, failed, did okay. One actually punched out of for about $1 million. I did all kinds of stuff, and then at some point in the middle of all of that, I found trading, and it fits the entrepreneurial spirit, minus the fact that when you start a company, there's a lot you got to deal with, like, you know, liability, insurance, payrolls, taxes, logistics, this and that. And with trading, you just have to know how to trade, you know?
Yeah, I can relate to that. Just there's no employees. There's no, it's just you, the screen, you handle everything yourself. It really is a lot less to deal with. So yeah. What did you learn from business that you applied to trading? Was it more like being strict, or was there any lessons that you got?
Yeah, it's actually a really great question. So I had learned, throughout my 20s, I'm a sociable guy. I meet a lot of people, and I was really, really close with like some, mediocre tycoons, like 100 million, 200 million, kind of guys. And they all of them across the board had one thing in common, more than one, but the one that stuck out the most is that they were crazy, crazy picky about the deals that they would get involved with. And it doesn't matter the industry, right? Like do their own hotels, you know, dude that had like, you know, transportation, you know, business. It doesn't matter what the business is. They all were so, so picky when it came to what deals they were willing to get involved with. And at the time I was like, man, they're like, you know, assholes. I mean, they're so, so, so tough about what they're willing to get involved with. It's almost like they're trying to rob people. But at some point I realized, nah, you know, you got only so many chips, and why do you got to put them on a table on anything other than, you know, a situation you absolutely love? And that's exactly what I do in trading. And that transfers completely.
So from the beginning, it was it clear to you that like the setups that you were, or that were good, or the ones that you were going to take? Was that like instead
in
of
the
like
beginning? No, yeah. I was terrible. Absolutely awful. but mentally, you know, I had that, and I applied that in the businesses that I had done myself, and I saw how successful, you know, of a strategy that is, or of a, you know, a part of your business personality. And when I started getting okay at trading, that's when I started, you know, being able to implement that. Because truth be told, you know, I mean, I don't know what's a good opportunity or bad opportunity at the beginning. You know what I mean? Once I understood what I'm looking at, yeah, man, just wait. And, you know, an opportunity is right. Cool. Put some money on the line.
And how did you get started? Did you get started with, yeah, like someone online, courses, attracted to certain markets, stocks, options, penny stocks, short selling, buying? Like, how did you get started?
It's a good question. I actually have an apology I got to throw out there to somebody if they're listening. But so I started with the online stuff, you know, like all the, I started in 2014. I did part-time until 2018. I'd also built the last business that I sold. I sold that business 2018, and I was doing those two things combined, but I was really focusing on that startup I had. And so I just went for, like, you know, whoever was marketing in 2014, you know, that was Sykes and Kunal and you know, I tried all those guys. And then as far as, you know, that apology that I owe to somebody. So one of Kunal's students, I won't say the name. If he ever sees this, he knows. I hired him. I paid him to teach me. You know, I saw him on a podcast, and I reached out to him. And the truth be told, he shouldn't have done that. He wasn't ready. And so I had to tell him that, and he didn't take it too well. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't know, no hard feelings. I read every book, saw every video, you know, joined a couple of rooms, paid a dude to teach me. I did everything that I possibly could. And eventually I found Nate, in his room. And that was, let's say, a year in. Because I kept on trying to do longs, it just didn't make sense to me. And when I saw Nate in his room, and, you know, Nate's real good with longs now, but at the time he wasn't. I mean, no offense, Nate. I saw his strategy, and I was like, man, that makes so much sense to me. I get it. I understand what the general idea is. And once I found something that I could understand, then I could really, really focus my everything into you know, mastering it. That's how I got to where I am now.
Great. Okay. So Nate back then. Okay. So Tim Sykes, 2014. Wow. That's a long time ago. I was still in grad school at that time. I had no idea what even a stock was, you know, so,
Me neither.
He was doing you. So 2014, yeah, you just got started. So 2014, I've seen the old DVDs of Sykes like a couple of years ago from back then. He was doing like pump and dump strategy. I think short selling pump and dumps, like Tim Sykes saying short sellers are evil now and all this, but he was all short selling back then. E-Trade was saying be bullish. He was saying in the DVD, I remember saying be bearish. And so Sykes was doing that. You're saying Nate was shorting. I guess Nate was, that's where he was shorting mostly because he was just figuring out the longs. Kunal, yeah. I guess. Kunal.
Bears, Bulls on Wall Street.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So
that was
so,
the first guy I saw.
So you gravitated towards Nate short selling. That's what you were.
Yeah, man. Like, you know how they say, oh, you know, figure out something that makes sense to you. And then, you know, hammer at that. And boy, is that undervalued advice. My goodness. Yeah. So I found Nate and I was like, oh, okay. I mean, at the time it was mostly like, you know, reactive parabolics and stuff like that.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
And the thing is that now, you know, things have changed a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
And now in order to be a successful, you know, momentum price action short seller, you need some skills, dude. I mean, you especially this year, you need some chops. Back then, it wasn't crowded at all. And so as soon as you get that parabolic, that kind of move, you know when it goes from like trading thick to trading thin, and that's, you know, margins and get me out of this trade, get me all that stuff. That's it, bro. That's the top. You're done. Don't need to overthink it. And you know, that was great because it showed me, you know, something I could understand. And even though, you know, things have evolved tremendously from there, so have I. You know, I've tried to keep up with the market, but that got me. That was the first, you know, trading strategy that I could, you know, find some success in. And I was like, okay, so this is possible. Now let me try and figure out everything else around it, you know?
And so for shorting those back then, what was, so now is it more trappy? Because there's a lot of short sellers, and when the first pullback happens, short sellers hit it, and then it squeezes again because too many short sellers hit it, and it goes for a second leg, third leg, as opposed to back then, it would hit the resistance from prior days or multi-day or long-term resistance, and then those bag holders will get out cleanly because there's not as much short sell. I think maybe short selling had more of a cleaner edge. There's still a lot of edge of short selling, but it had a lot more cleaner edge because there was less people shorting. Is that what do you think about that?
That's exactly correct. So it's, you know, if you had a stuff move or whatever, you know, people call it, you know, an HOD clear out or whatever they want to call it, a stuff move, that's it. It's done. If you had like a, you know, what people call a kill candle or an FU candle, cool, it's done. You know, everything was clean. Nowadays, you get a parabolic or you get a stuff move or you get a, you know, an FU candle, you still have to work your mind at 100% capacity and look at it and be like, do I trust it?
Yeah.
How do I feel about it? Yeah. Really? You know, and I think that me and my buddies were talking about it today. It's not just that, you know, it's more crowded with the short sellers. It's also that, you know, the operators, because me and you trade stuff that's, you know, a lot of times operated, right? And the operators, they know that there's so many of us out there and they know what we do. So it's you're also dealing with, you know, the crowdedness of the shorts. And also sometimes you're dealing with sophisticated, you know, stock operators. And so it's a very different environment than what it was back then. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're seeing operators, you're talking about like sophisticated people equipped with algorithms as well as
manipulators.
And for sure.
You know, the people that, you know, if it's a, you know, dilutive capital raise push, you know, the bid farm that they, you know, that Boosted, you know, farmed this out to or whatever, those guys, you know what I mean?
Interesting. So yeah, absolutely great points. Okay, so how would you describe yourself as a trader in all this? Like systematic, discretionary, okay, short seller focused. What would you say?
From a purely, you know, definitive perspective, I'm a manual, you know, discretionary opportunistic. But from a more like, you know, human perspective, I'm a robot. I'm a robot and I have, you know, the patience of an elephant. And so I got this little WhatsApp group, like me and like five of my friends. We trade there every day and all, and, you know, we like, you know, go through the day together. I'm always the guy that can, you know, last the longest, and, you know, in a trade, or can, you know, handle the toughest of volatility, without, you know, passing out from, you know, elevated heart rate or anything like that. It's, I'm a robot. That's what I've, you know, that's the kind of trader I am.
Now, when you say robot, does that mean like you have, you're very disciplined with your trading, or is it more patience and discipline, which is killer, you know, in my opinion? When you, like, a lot of times I'll say, okay, this is my target price. And then it, let's say as a short seller, and then it comes down like halfway towards my target. And I'm like, I have to take the profit. You know, like for you as a robot, do you wait a little longer? Like,
It's not. I'm not like, you know, I'm not quite there yet. I'm right there with you. I scale in, I scale out. But it used to be that, you know, I would never make it with any portion to the end of the move. And, you know, as time progressed and I worked on all of those things, on, you know, the discipline or on the patience to, like, as you said, you know what the target is, right? And so I worked really hard on, it used to be like, okay, let me cover half on the first flush. Oh my God, I'm green. You know, that's awesome. And then work the other half, you know, as it goes my way. And then it became, okay, let me cover a quarter on the first flush. Then it became, let me cover 10%. On the first flush, then it became, let me cover 5% on the first, you know what I mean? Like the bulk of the covers became later and later and later in the move, but I'm still there with you. I scale out because not everything is a, first of all, not every trade is, oh, it's going to go to zero now. It's some stuff, you know, the edge is not that, you know what I mean? It's more of a shorter, you know, term edge. But even on the ones where you're like, okay, this was like a multi-day runner. It ran for 3 or 4 days, you know, 50X, you know, float, this, that, like, you know, that you could put as much risk as you want, come back in 3 days and cover it. You know, like those really, really A++ setups, even on those, you know, I still, you know, scale out gradually. I guess I'm still developing myself.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so when did you get profitable? When did you start like full time, like confidence in your trading? When, because you said 2014, that first year is like all over the place. And then when did you start to like get it?
Oh, it took me a long time, dude. I lost money 3 years in a row. but you have to. And then I broke even the fourth year. And to me, you know, breaking even was amazing. It said, you're close. But, but you got to remember, man, like I had built a business during that time that I was trading part-time, and that took everything from me. It was really hard. And so I was more focused on that at the time than on, you know, trading was like in the background. It was a really serendipitous, you know, moment that around the time that I broke even a year before I sold the business, and I spent a year, like, you know, I guess you can call it doing okay if you're not losing money. And then I had my, you know, my own liquidity event when I sold that business. And I was like, you know what? I think if I really, really apply myself from here onwards, I could actually do this. And it was a perfect timing. And that's how long it took, dude. 4 years.
Yeah. 4 years. I have a similar history like that. For me, so did you get any inspiration from others? Like, I know for me, I was talking about this with my friend Sam the other day. He's a newer trader, but he's in my one of my groups. He's always asking good questions. And I was listening to like Jack Kellogg or Kyle and all this, and I don't really, in the beginning especially, I didn't really resonate too much of what they were doing, but their stories of how they came up from a small amount of money and were able to their stories of how they worked part time and built themselves up. And by year two, year three, so those kind of stories always gave me inspiration. So, or even Tim Grittani. So, did you ever get any inspiration of like, oh, if they can do it, I can do it. Let me push. You know, it's possible.
Only at the absolute beginning, when they like it hyped me up. I was like, oh wow, like I guess you trade stocks and you make money. And then, you know, to those dudes that have become genuinely, you know, scalable, successful within a year or two, good for you guys. Honestly, mad respect. That wasn't the case for me, and so that hype is what got me excited in the beginning. But once you know, start trading and you find the realities of trading, that hype, you know, doesn't do much anymore. And if anything, it might even, you know, be slightly detrimental, because look, we know the stats on traders, you know what I mean? And you know, even myself, that, you know, it took a few years. And during that time, I'm seeing people like killing it or saying that they're killing it or whatever. That wasn't really that fun, because, you know, the cycle of, you know, you actually trying to make it is in the beginning for me and for a lot of people. I know it's one step forward, two steps back, and that two steps back just is so hard mentally. And then, you know, what pushed me wasn't them and their motivation. It was me. It was, you know, I had made up my mind that I have to, you know, I'm going to figure this out. And thank God I stuck to it.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it is just sticking it out the first few years and not like taking a huge, huge loss where you're just mentally, you know, you're, it's just so hard to take, you know. Imagine, right? So how did you deal with any blowups or any hard setbacks in the beginning? Because you said two steps forward. No, one step forward, two steps back. That sounds right. But did you ever have, did you have any really big loss in the beginning that was like 10 steps back?
Two.
And how is it coming from that? Do you remember how it was?
Yeah. So, first of all, you're absolutely right that, and I preach the same thing to, you know, whoever I can, that when you're starting out, your job is to get screen time. Your job is not to lose money. So for the love of God, trade small. And then as far as dealing with those, I remember one of your podcasts, you were talking to somebody, I don't remember who it was, but you guys were talking about, oh, do you think that a trader needs to blow up, or do you know, do something, you know, in that realm of a blow up? You know, in order to, you know, develop and
I think that was Lucci's podcast.
Was it? It might have been.
Chris Cady. Yeah.
Might have been. But they all like blend into one thing in my mind. But
yeah, same here. I had to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But look, here's how it went down, first of all. So the first blow up was okay. I was trading small anyway because I was figuring it out. And so it felt really bad, like my ego and mental, but financially it was fine. So it didn't really hit hard. And then the second time happened about maybe a year after or something like that. I'm not sure. And at that point I had gotten, you know, like a little bit of a skill could be a bad thing, right? And so I was trading with more money. And, you know, thought I was better. I was better, but just not good enough at all back then. And then I blew up with more money, and that hurt. That it crushed me mentally. It, you know, felt like there's a hole in my stomach. You know, like you think about the future. Okay, I really wanted this to be my future. Is this not going to be my future? Do I have to figure out something else? You know, but I do have a really, you know, one of the things that defines me as a human being is that my mental is strong as nails. And so I don't know, man, I wanted to be able to do this. And so I just got back up, like, you know, like Rocky.
Yeah, man. It's like Rocky, man. It's like Rocky. I know for myself, I had a couple of setbacks too, and for me, what helped was like, I have a painting on my wall right here of burning the boats. I look at it all the time, the Hernan Cortez, the conquistador. I don't know if you know the story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Mexico and to conquer Mexico on behalf of Spain. He burned all the boats when the soldiers were sleeping. So the soldiers had no choice but to fight when they woke up. Like, they can't go back, and because they were complaining. But yeah, I have that painting right here. And like, since the beginning, I decided, you know, I think it's that mental state, like some, you know, and it's not, trading is not for everybody, but although like, you know, it's just like, some people are just very strong. They can take a huge punch in the gut. You know what I mean? It's maybe it's like for you, all the things in your life that shaped you, because you were in the Israeli army and you've suffered business setbacks and like, you just, the will and the strength to just, to do it no matter what and figure it out. I think that's a good trait. And if whoever can find that in them, I know for me, when I left my architecture career, I was like, this is it. If I did architecture for 15 years and then now I'm leaving that, this is it. I'm going to figure this out. If Tim Grittani can do it, if these guys can do it, even though they did it in a shorter time, I use them as like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. And like, how did they do it? Okay, Grittani was in college when he did it. He had no bills. He had no worries in the world. I have bills. My landlord is banging on my door for the rent, behind credit card bills. My car is getting a ticket outside. I need to organize my life to be in the mind state of Tim Grittani when he was in college, not a care in the world, and just focus on stocks. So that's what I did. I was like, all right, how do I organize my life so I can give this a real, real shot? You know, and I'm burning the boats and I'm going to keep coming back. I already made a decision at that time. It's like, if for some reason I blow up or whatever, I'm going to go work, drive Uber and come back, you know, with $2,000 at a time, yeah. You know? So
it's look, all businesses are hard. Like, I remember, you know, when I started the last business that I had, when you start a business, you don't know that, you know, failure rate for new businesses in the first year is about the same as the failure rate of stock traders. It's just, trading is harder than that, because in business, you know, there isn't necessarily, you know, you have the normal challenges of whatever, you know, vertical or industry you're in, or, you know, right? But with trading, particularly with the small caps, but maybe with everything in trading, somebody's trying to get you. Somebody legitimately is trying to get you. Every trader, you know, out there tells the same story. I used to, like, you know, sell the bottom and buy the top. Why is that? It's not an accident. There's, you know, there's a emotional structure built into it that pushes you into making the wrong choices. And so you feel not just that, like, you know, you're not successful, but you feel dumb. You feel like extra dumb. I bought if you're a short seller, I covered the top. Or if you're a long, you know, trader, I sold the bottom. You know what I mean? And then it, like, went right up. It basically, you know, stop running and all that, you know, trappiness that you mentioned, all that stuff. So it's harder because of that, because it gets you in your.
It's designed for that. Because you got to be counterintuitive, you know, because these algos and these guys that are hunting you, they know this stuff about human behavior and human psychology, and they trade around that. So
it's not just on the intentional stuff. It's also just the way that it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, right now, you know, like, you know, stock market, you know, the general broader market is, you know, obviously we're, you know, fading, you know, quite a lot. You know, at some point, you know, I'm not going to get to like macroeconomics and all that stuff. But I mean, at some point, that's going to be a fantastic long opportunities. And who's going to be there to capitalize on that? Very few, because everybody else is exhausted. So it's not just in the heavily manipulated, you know, small pond that me and you swim in. It's just how the stock market is, you know, like it's a cesspool of emotion, and you got to be counterintuitive, just like you said. You have to buy bottoms and sell tops. And if natural human emotion, if you take natural human emotion, the way that it, the way our emotions should be, and you use that to trade stocks, you will, you know, buy, you know, you'll buy the top and sell the bottom if you're a long, or vice versa if you're a short seller, because natural human emotion is works the opposite of how the stock market works. And so you just gotta figure that out. That's all.
Great. Okay. So now some trading questions. So, all right. So you want to take us through, okay. So what's your process for entering a trade? What's your process like for, in the morning, maybe? Do you have like a pre-market routine, or like, you know, what time of day do you like to trade, and what's your process?
Sure, dude. So, obviously it depends on the temperature of the market at any given moment. Nowadays I like, you know, try and start the day around 7 a.m. and I see, you know, what's going on in the pre-market. And, you know, I do the, you know, the bare minimum, you know, due diligence, you know, dilution tracker and, you know, all that jazz. And I make up my mind. I'm like, you know, so, you know, you do the due diligence that we do, you know, the float and the, you know, the financing and whatever. And then I take a look at the support and resistance on the charts, and then I make up my mind. I'm like, okay, what do I like the most for a short? And then I, you know, create kind of a wish scenario in my mind, right? And I'm like, okay, I'd love it to do XYZ. And if it does XYZ, then that would be a fantastic opportunity. And if it doesn't do that, then, you know, all right, don't have to trade it. And if it does, and if it does that, then, you know, that's I'll get involved. And that I'm talking about is whatever setups I, you know. You know what I mean? So I want to see a setup that I know, and I wait for it. I used to have pre-market trades and market hour trades. I would have a hard stop at 9 a.m. because, you know, between 9 and 9:30 gets like a little bit of the pre-open shenanigans, and I used to not want to be involved there. But I've, you know, gotten to a point where I can handle it, and so that isn't to say I just hold. It's to say that I can like decide a little bit better and say, okay, I'm not going to hold this into market open because I think I'll have a better opportunity at it during market hours, or I don't think I'm going to get a better entry than this in the pre-market on this. And so I'm willing to roll the dice and just keep it. And, you know, in case I'm wrong, I'll manage the position.
Yeah, I know Nate has said that before, because you keep pre-market trades separate from the regular hours. I know, I think I've heard him say that before. And, you know, it's just in pre-market, things behave a little different. Because, like, for example, mm-hmm. I've noticed in the early pre-markets, because I'll trade early pre-market a lot of times, especially when things are slower during the day. But anyway, in the pre-market, I've noticed these people that tend sometimes... I'll notice if an algo is running during the day, a lot of times in the pre-market, they'll be testing liquidity for the algo later. So, like, you know, you want to separate that trade because it behaves a lot more natural in the pre-market. And then as opposed to in the regular hours, they'll put a PR at 9 a.m. or something and then get the algo running like crazy. So that stock that traded cleanly, faded cleanly at from 4 a.m. to 9 a.m., it can... all of a sudden have a ton of volume. It can suddenly like trap shorts in the first 15 minutes, and then they'll put an algo on it and it'll rip all day long. So like,
or vice versa, where you have the situation where they're not, you know, testing liquidity for market hours, they're balls to the walls in pre-market. And that thing is nothing but up. Those ones tend to just do nothing but fade pre-market.
It's true.
So those are the ones, and I was saying earlier, some I choose to keep, some I choose to not. That's exactly what you're talking about. The ones that fade pre-market, I take that money, I say thank you, and I say please ramp it up in market hours. And the ones that just murdered shorts in the pre-market, again, it depends. We're talking very generally over here, you know, broadly speaking, I tend to look very closely at those as far as, you know, having an idea that the top might be pre-market.
Absolutely. Okay. So for dilution, do you look for like if an ATM is there or some warrant prices or some exercise prices or whatever it is to hit that resistance and then, you know, to fade?
Well, the first thing I want to see is like 3 months of cash or less, because, you know, you have situations, we've had it this week, you have it all the time where I don't remember what was it this week. There was like a runner that had like they had like 10 years of cash. So, and yeah, they had like dilution, you know, ready to go. So what? They don't need it. You know what I mean? So the first thing I want to see is I have noticed that the sweet spot for me for like the really, really good plays is 3 months of cash or less. And if I could see 3 months of cash on hand, then I look at the dilution and, you know, we work all, you know, try and understand it. I'm not that great at it. I'm trying to, you know, it's a process for me to get, you know, better at, you know, understanding all the, you know, the diluted financing stuff. Okay, but I'm good enough to use it for my job. But for me, they gotta have no cash. I mean, that's more important. That's how people get run over. Oh, they got warrants, 100% coverage, full ratchet. This, okay, cool. You know, they got 4 years of cash. They're not gonna dilute. You know what I mean? So that it's important to see they got no cash.
Now, okay, so with that, so I've noticed in this market, maybe what are some observations you had around that cash thing? Because like in this bear market, for example, sometimes these companies, they're still doing an offering, or especially the biotechs and pharmaceuticals, maybe with a little more cash on hand in 3 months. Has it been happening more now in your experience?
But they might do great pricing. You know what I mean? And so, you know, PLRX, man, raised at 1850. That's fantastic pricing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, look, it goes back to, you know, what we're talking about earlier, where like, you know, I personally want to be crazy, crazy picky about the situation in which I put capital at risk. And there's, you know, any number of you know, situations or anomalies to a situations or variations of that. But I think it's best to stick to whatever works for you, you know? And so, I'm not at a place where I'm trying to really, really understand the mindset of, you know, well, are they going to raise capital even if they still have money? And should I then be tempted to... That sounds like you're downgrading your setup from an A+ to an A to a B+. You know what I mean? And so there's no, I get it. It's, we're all losing our minds this year, you know, trying to work like it was last year. And it gets some people antsy, but you know, chill
out. So great. Okay. So a couple things there. So you're sticking with your strengths and what you know, especially in this market, which has been tough. So you're trying to be extra focused on your strengths. So with that being said, why do you think this year has been hard on Momo short sellers?
Because all the small cap dumb money longs are gone. And so like last year or in the year before that, when we were shorting, who were we shorting into? We were shorting into, you know, other shorts being blown up and dumb money chasing at ridiculous levels. And what that does is it creates a fantastic fade because, you know, obviously the absence of the blown out shorts is one part of the bid that's gone now, but also the intense selling pressures of people that bought at ridiculous prices and now have to figure out what to do with that bag, you know, it produced the kind of, you know, couple of years that we had in 2021. Those dudes, the longs are gone, but the shorts are still here. Why? Because we crashed. So the longs are gone because they blew up. The shorts are still here because we made money. But now who are you going to short into? Yourself, other shorts, you know? And so if you, if, and I don't know that that's true. That's just my guess. Who knows what's true, but that's how basically it has never been more crowded to Momo short. And that's the best explanation I could figure out. So what I try to do is I say, okay, well, my job is to short when shorts are getting blown up. So I look at a setup and I ask myself, are shorts blown up yet? Nope. All right. And you know, normally what it will end up looking like is, you know, a really crazy move attracts the attention of the shorts. Shorts get involved, this, that, and the other. It, you know, does its thing, traps, goes, whatever, then finds like a resistance, a really obvious resistance, right? HOD clear outs, you know, all that stuff, but it's soaking. And when it breaches that level, anything above that level, the obvious resistance after all of the, you know, initial run, that's nothing but shorts being blown out above that. And when that's done, you can have a trade. And so that's how I've been doing it this year. I mean, it's hard. It's not been awesome. It's not, I mean, look, I'm doing all right. I'm, you know, but we all did a lot better last year, right?
Yeah. A couple interesting things there. So today I was trading a stock. Which one was it? GOEV. That's right. And I was shorting, and it was on SSR. And I've noticed this in this market with SSR stocks that move a little slower, that I can kind of fill out on the level two and all that, that it was just harder to get filled. And I'm thinking, why is it harder to get filled? It seems like it's harder to get filled because I think it's on short sell restriction. So I'm shorting into other shorts. That's why it's not allowing to fill, you know, yeah. because if there was buyers, I would get filled. Because I was putting the order in below the price. So if I'm not getting filled, but you know, it's taking a while to get filled, it's because the short sellers is piling on the tape. So, right. You know, and also, you know, those buyers that you mentioned that are not as prevalent as before. It's really funny. And I like to compare, like I see in real life sometimes. I don't see the Uber driver talking about stocks in a long time, you know, or like here in Los Angeles in this office building. There's a lot of lawyers. I used to get like once a day at least, some lawyer would ask me, because he'll pass by the office, they'll see my setup, ask me about how the stock is going and this and that. And people have avoided. I've noticed this. That people have avoided. They go the long way. They don't even want to pass through like this hallway. They don't want. They want.
They want nothing heaven to forbid. Do. Heaven forbid they get reminded of.
Yeah.
Whatever they lost.
Yeah, and I remember one time at the kitchen last year. Somebody was saying, oh yeah, just short sell. It's eventually the market's gonna turn around, this and that. They were like, are you sure? I think this is bull market. This is the lawyer was telling me. I think it's gonna go. I'm gonna take cash from my credit card and put it in the market. It's gonna go. It's gonna. And yeah, that guy, he specifically avoids walking around my office.
That sucks though, dude. Because look, I can, you know, be the robot and be detached and all that stuff, but it sucks to see people suffer. And it's also really weird to be a short seller, man. Like, it's awesome because, you know, if there's consistency there, but I mean, people are getting hurt on the other side of that. And that does suck. That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, you know, so what attracted you towards short selling? Cause like, I know with the small caps for me, it made sense. This market, this company is on the markets because they need cash and there's a lot of manipulation. And a lot of times, you know, the stock goes up even 20%. If you think about any big cap company, it goes up 20% in one day, which is a small amount for small caps, but it's so big for a big cap. It just sounded like easier to trade with the overall idea that things are going to come down. Gravity is going to take effect. So what attracted you towards short? Because short selling is kind of weird. You know, it's like when you have a bear mindset all the time, you know what I mean? So what attracted you towards it?
The consistency that it provided. So, And that all I ever wanted when I started trading, and you know, you dream your dreams and think about it and run numbers in your mind and all that stuff, it all revolves around consistency. You're supposed to be able to make money in a consistent way. And if you're trying to long something, right, and let's say there's a certain key level, right? So you're like, okay, over this key level, I think it triggers and I'm gonna go long or whatever, right? If it drops below your risk and you have to stop out of your trade as a long, does that necessarily mean that you could trade that long, that same stock long again? No, it may never come back to that key level. However, you know, conversely, when you're short, you know, let's say you identify some sort of a key level and you short against that key level. If you did your job right, if you identified the right name, if it goes over your risk and, you know, you stop out, it's probably still going to be a trade in there later. You know what I mean? Or you could take a look at that scenario another way. And this is how I got to where I am now. This is how I really started my consistency was I said, all right, these, you know, the really, really silly moves. I mean, I don't know if you've done this exercise, David, but I've looked at many, many of my trades for years and years and years going back. Pretty much every single one of those stocks, whatever price level they were at, $5, $10, $100, $200, they found their way back to $1. Like if you look on a long time frame. So, and you know, we trade shit codes. So I'm not talking about the Amazons of the world or the Microsoft. I'm talking about the shit codes. And so it's, we know where it's going to go. The question is, can you make it there? And so that's what attracted me to that is the ability to you know where it's going to go and be able to be consistent. And because that's all I wanted as a trader, is to be consistent. That's how I can believe I can have a career out of it. Otherwise, it's a hobby. And the first you know time that I truly found consistency was by cheating, right? Because when you get to a certain level, you put on you know decent amount of risk, and you better be you know accurate, and you better be everything. But before I there was a time where I could see, you know, some of the big picture, I could see where this is going to go, but I couldn't really nail the timing, or I couldn't really read the action well enough. So I said, all right, cool. Let me trade a small amount of let me put a small amount of capital on it and just wait. And you know what? If the capital is small enough, that works like almost 100% of the times, right?
Yeah.
On the shit goes. And so that consistency is what with all the, you know, the empathy that I have for the people on the other side. And I do have empathy. You know, it is what it is, you know? And so that consistency is what attracted me to this particular strategy. And all I had to do was go from a place where I'm making play money because I don't really know how to time it right to learning how to time it right. But having that skin in the game for, you know, because I am making money, so I show up day after day after day, eventually, you know, led me to the ability to read the action better. And now you could put on more risk.
Excellent. Well said. Okay. And with that being said, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you were close to profitable but not profitable yet?
Trade less, choose your setups better, because you know that. So you have that. I know a lot of people that are at that very, very frustrating part where they're like 80% of the way to being the trader they want to be, but something small is missing, and that something small is keeping them is you know constantly preventing them from being you know profitable or profitable enough, and it hurts your mental. And that creates some sort of a, you know, a snowball effect that just constantly prevents you from really shining. And, you know, all you have to do, like if you've gotten to a point where you're almost good enough, you see things, you make money, but you keep on giving some back, then your problem is not in making money. You make money, but you're also losing money. So stop losing money. You know, and I know that sounds like obvious or whatever, but it isn't. It's really powerful. Trade less.
Yeah, you know, it's very good that you said, like, for me, for example, you said this a moment ago, just before this. What I would do early on, I knew that most likely things are going to go down over a period of time. I would trade small and just do swing trades, because then I had under PDT. I don't know if you had to go through that. And I would put very small positions and just wait. And just that would cause me to trade less. And actually, PDT caused me to trade less as well. And I was able to preserve money like that by being extra patient, trading less, and then studying in the middle of the downtime. You know what I mean? And watching the market screen time. So, yeah, just trading less is key. Now, with you, did you, like, how much were you trading in the beginning? Like, was it hard for you to trade less? Because I had PDT, so, like, I had to trade less.
I didn't have the PDT issue. I was always over to PDT. And so, yeah, it was very hard, to trade less. And it would cause exactly the issue that I was, you know, kind of describing before, because if you're, you know, basically, if you're excited about trading, as if you're going, like, you know, to the batting cages or whatever, you know, do something fun, you might be in trouble, because there's a lot of stuff that happens, and every now and then one of those is going to black swan your ass. And so if you know that you're touching everything that looks like it might be a short, then you are guaranteed to get smacked seriously every time a black swan comes, because he'll be in it.
Yeah.
And so it was very hard to trade less. It was very hard to learn patience on entries. It was very hard to learn patience on exits. When me and my friends talk about it, and, you know, when I try and, you know, help folks that, you know, haven't gotten there yet mentally, I compare it to quitting smoking. It's the same kind of, you know, monumental mental exercise to change your behavior. And I that's what I did, dude. I made such a huge mental change that, like, allowed me to stop, you know, trade less. Don't touch everything. Don't, you know what I mean? It was tough. But once you make that change, once you flip that switch in your mind, oh man, you're good.
Yeah, you're good. And what if you could pinpoint a few things that took your trading from 5 to 6 figures, what would they be?
Learning when to scale. Like what makes a crazy, crazy good opportunity. You know, like one of the most memorable trades for me was CEI last year, like around
CEI?
Yeah. But particularly the move that it did in, like, it might have been September or October of last year, when it went from 50 cents to $5. It had all the writings on the wall. If you know what you're doing, you looked at that and you knew. Actually, I had one like that this year. Mullen, MULN.
Oh yeah, around, yeah.
I don't know, February or something. Yeah, but those are not just any pumps and dumps, dude. Those are, you know, companies that have 100, 200 million floats that have.
Yeah.
Like,
oh man. Yeah. 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 And it just, yeah, and it goes from a couple, like, under a dollar to a few dollars, like.
It's a huge boat with, you know, a share structure that is so fugly.
Yeah, it was crazy. CEI was so bloated, you know, it was like this massive pig. And the pig is flying, like, it's just getting bigger and bigger and flying. So, and then it just cracks. I halted down.
Knowing to recognize rare opportunities and knowing that they're rare and knowing that this is a risk on situation now. That's what, you know, that's what makes the difference, and helps you move to higher and higher levels, whether it's from, you know, four figures to five figures, five to six, six to seven, I don't think it really matters. It's just recognizing the times where like, I'm like, oh my God, is this, I mean, is CI really $5? Are they really like, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's
insane. Did you catch it on the halt down?
Oh, I caught it.
That it was a crazy halt, like such a big float, just it halted multiple times, I think.
yeah. But there was, you know, once the first crack was there, yeah, that was it, man. You could have, beginning, you know, every, I mean, you could put a tremendous amount of risk and know that wherever it goes, it's, your risk is limited. It's not like it's going to, it's reasonable to assume that it's not going to go over $5. So your risk is extremely, you know, limited at that point. So you can really put on size.
I hit it on the halt down, but like thinking about it now, I left so much on the table. And like, I remember you could even, I was thinking, why? I know this is going to go in a few weeks. It's going to go from five, like $2 probably in like a week or two. I was like, I should put a swing trade on and just let it go because like it's done. And I didn't, they maybe short the balances in between. And I knew what I should do, but I didn't do it. I mean, this is such a clear thing because the share structure, like you said, the float was so huge. It was a manipulated pump and dump. Everything, all the stars aligned. And like, I just played it for a halt down almost like I would trade any other stock. And like, it's not any other stock. I wish I would have hit it more. I mean, for me.
But you take that energy. So you know, this conversation is coming from your question. It's from the question of like, you know, how do you level up? And the thing is that if you really, you know, do what we do actively, you're going to see, you know, an insane opportunity like that. And you're going to have the feeling that you just described, oh man, really? I traded like it was just any other day trade. What's wrong with me? And then another opportunity comes by and you do it again and again. And I had passed up on fantastic opportunities like that, like, I don't know how many times. And every time that happened, I would be so furious at myself. And one day I said, that's it, enough. The next opportunity that I know that it's a good opportunity, just like you knew that CEI, I knew CEI, not $2, man. I knew that I was going sub $1.
I was being kind.
Were being kind. Yeah. And so it's the same kind of absolute mental change that I did when I, you know, changed my mindset to being more patient or trading less or whatever. It's that same thing. I was like, it came from anger, you know, like I can't believe I'm you know, missing on these opportunities. That's what I'm in the market for. So I just made a decision. I said, never again. Next time an opportunity like that comes, I'm trading it like I know I should. And whatever happens, happens. And you know what? Good things happen, you know, so when I implemented that. And so, you know, but once you make that change once, you're done. You know, now it's not a big challenge to do the right thing the next time.
Well said, man, because like in order to make that shift from like a five figure trader to a six figure or whatever it is, six figure, seven, whatever, you do have to have that reflection with yourself. And for you, like what I'm getting, okay, so it was like, all right, this certain setups only come once, twice a year or a certain amount of time. I need to hit the A-plus setups with bigger size. I need to, you know, I need to be way more selective, trade other stuff less, size up more on the better ones. The ones that like CEI that come around that are so clear to me, I got to maximize the profit out of this because that's my setup. And I guess that comes through like journaling and all that. So before we start to wrap it up, so how did journaling take a part on all that?
Did you? It didn't. And that was a big, that's a missed opportunity on my end. Kinfo was the first time I ever connected to a journal. And I cannot explain to you why. It's a shame on me. I'm sure like when I, now that I'm journaling, it does, you know, I do see things clearer and things I didn't really quite know. And I wish I had done it way, way sooner because I was basically, I was in the dark, you know, I think I know what I'm doing wrong, and I think I know what I'm doing right, and I think, but you don't really, not until you look at it.
Yeah.
And so that's my bad.
I know, because like when you say the setups that you're good at, like for example, I didn't know until like I put on, I think it was Trader View at the time. I don't know if you heard of Trader View.
Trader View.
Yeah. And it showed, okay, pre-market, I make more money than regular hours at the time. And I was like, I was my first 2 years in. I was like, all right, let me just trade pre-market until the stats say otherwise. If the stats start to fade off pre-market, then I'll start to do something else. And it said Fridays, I'm red on Fridays. So I was like, you know what? I got to preserve capital, like, you know, like stop losing money, like you said. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to trade Fridays. I'll just take Fridays off. So it's like when you have the journaling or the stats in front of you like that, like TraderSync, we were talking about, you have TraderSync now. Mm-hmm. CenterPoint gives it for free, by the way. So there's no excuse not to have it. You know, you can see the days that you're profitable. You can see a lot of stats and a lot of things, and you can actually journal if you like and tag the trades. I don't know if you like to tag them, and yeah. you can track your strategies, and like, I don't know, that helps a lot. But yeah, any other things you want to touch on, or maybe where do you see yourself in the future with trading, maybe? Or
yeah, sure. I mean, like, this is supposed to be like some sort of a service to, you know, the people that watch it. And so Lord knows I learned so much from these kinds of videos. And so
yeah.
So I'd say, you know, to anybody that's, you know, seeing this and they're on their journey, to each their own. You know, find whatever works for you. But for me, from my perspective, I had to trade like I don't need that money. And I had to trade, you know, small until I got it. So please, please do those things and build up your skill set before you put any real risk on. Because we know the stats about traders. And so don't be that stat, you know, do the right thing. As far as dreams or like where I see myself in the future or whatever, I my dream is to run a small fund. Like, I know that like when you get to a certain level, you can, okay, am I gonna, you know, supplement my income with, you know, education, or am I gonna whatever, like there's all these routes that become open to you, you know what I mean? And but for me, I love what I do. I don't want to do anything other than, you know, trade. Don't get me wrong, I'm so happy to help whoever, you know, and if anybody sees and feels like we're reaching out, please do. I don't know that I'll have time for everybody, but I don't charge or anything, you know. It's just, you know, to pass it along. But what I want to do is I'd love to manage a small fund where I can, you know, maximize on what it is that I do. And I actually spoke to some allocators. This has been on my mind for a while, and I'm starting to take the steps necessary to do that. I spoke to some allocators. I got some positive feedback. It'll be a while. It's not like it'll be tomorrow, but that's my dream.
That's pretty cool, man. Yeah, I've seen your stuff. I found you on LinkedIn, and I think you said something like that. Like, you know, how cool, like, I love what I do. You know, it's like, you just really like being a trader and having the freedom that comes with it. I know I do, man. It's just, it is great. You know, once you get profitable and things start to become more calm with your life, it's a great profession. You know what I'm saying? And there's never ending opportunity. You can take it as far as you want. You know, you can talk about funds. You can talk about all types of, just, you know, it's just unlimited potential, whatever you want to do. Unlimited levels.
And the capital markets are huge. Me and you, I think, are just scratching the surface. So, and it's such an interesting world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And with that, okay, so any book recommendations?
It's been a while. I'm sorry, man. Like I grinded really hard with books and, you know, videos and conference and all that stuff in the beginning, but it's been a little while. So I didn't really digest much other than podcasts. And by the way, your podcast is really, really good. Like, you, I don't know if people really appreciate the subtleties of this. Like I watched like your episodes, and you say stuff like, like, you know, quietly and, you know, kind of by the way. And I'm like, whoa, like that was, yes. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that, you know, obviously Aaron Fifield stuff and all those guys.
Traders,
Yeah.
You know, that was the purpose of the podcast. If you look at the description of the podcast I put on Apple or whatever, or Spotify and YouTube, it's the same description. It says, yeah, the focus is to get nuggets of information to those, you know, for trade. No, like what you said, like a little, like, you know, that's a nugget of information. That's like, I know that's what helped me a lot in the past. Like those, like one or two sentences that from a podcast, I was able to implement right away, you know? So yeah, it's cool, man. I'm glad to hear that. That's really cool. I wonder how many hours I got talking on the podcast now, man. It's probably like 100 hours. So there's a lot of stuff there. It's a lot of stuff, man. Good stuff. So just like this podcast and all the knowledge that you just gave out. Mo, well, thanks so much for coming on and taking the time. And like, yeah, how could people find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. On Twitter, my handle is, I think it's short isn't easy.
Short isn't easy.
I think that's my handle over there. You could reach out to me there. I will see it. But it's more of like, I use that more as a spectator, you know, to, you know, follow people I want to follow and see what they have to say.
Yeah.
LinkedIn, I'm sure you'll like write, you know, the spelling of my name, and that's where I really am. You can find me there.
Yeah, no, it's cool. You're active on there, and it encourages me to get more active on LinkedIn as well. So LinkedIn's great.
Different crowd.
Yeah, different crowd for sure. Mo, thanks again for coming on, man, and we'll keep in touch.
Right on, please.
See you, man. Bye.
That concludes today's episode. Make sure to like and subscribe to the channel on the platform you use. The Friendly Bear Podcast is hosted by me, David, where you can find me on Twitter at @reverse_long. You can find The Friendly Bear Podcast at www.thefriendlybearpodcast.com, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and now on YouTube at Friendly Bear Research. Until next time, thank you for listening to The Friendly Bear Podcast.